Hello, good morning, and welcome to Raider Nation Radio. It's the morning tailgate here on this Tuesday. Thank you so much for joining us, Clay Baker, Vinny Bonsignor. We're here in our Las Vegas studios. 702-365-9200 is the number to reach us on the phones and on the text line. And you can hit us up on X at R&R 920 AM. 8 o'clock, we'll talk to Jason Fitz, Raider Nation's Grammy winner at 8 from Yahoo Sports. And we'll also talk to Rob Meisch, Chicago Sun-Times writer, as well as author. We'll talk a little bit about the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. There's a ESPN list on the top pro athletes. We'll get his thoughts on everything. Rob Meisch joins us at 9 o'clock. Happy to have Rob aboard. And we will get your thoughts as well up on the text line, 702-365-9200, which is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center. And in about 20 minutes' time, we'll give you the keyword of the day so you can qualify for that summer of fun vacation this week. It's a 7-night cruise to Mexico, Ensenada, Cabo, San Lucas, Mazatlan, and money. We'll give you the keyword.
Sounds like
in just
an
a few
Adam
minutes.
Hill vacation. He's always going to Mexico. You notice that?
Always. Ever since I've known him, it's been almost like 25 years now.
San Diego or Mexico?
Yeah, right.
He knows how to get down. Adam Hill knows how to get down.
Well, he always has that mentality of like, well, since I'm already in San Diego, let's just go across the border.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's always like, you know, I didn't really plan on anything,
right.
But I just know 7 different places I'm going to
right.
go.
He does have a crew that they get to Cabo and all, basically every place that you just named right there.
Oh, what it would
so
be.
You might
be.
Run into Adam. Yeah. You might run into Adam, yeah. and that would be a fun thing to do.
Adam might be driving the ship.
He has
a little captain's hat, a little like Captain Stubing white shorts.
And that would be a that would be quite the sight, but yeah, he knows how to have a little bit of fun. So
Adam's a bachelor, and there's plenty of bachelors in sports media, and mm-hmm. You know, they all get together and they go across the border, and then you're just lucky to see that they come back in one piece.
That's the that's the whole key, is that it's not the going, it's the coming back and making sure you come back and, you know, that your whole crew is intact, because sometimes you leave with 6 and you come back with 4. And mm-hmm. You know,
some people lose time, like a UFO abduction. And you're like, well, they're on their own.
I was on a road trip, heading out from Los Angeles to Denver. I want to say it was with the Rams. Maybe it was I don't remember who it was, but I'm leaving on a Saturday, coming back on a Monday, right?
Okay.
So it's early Saturday morning, I'm at LAX, heading to Denver. All right, and there's this bachelorette group that's sitting in my, you know, terminal near me. They're as festive as you could possibly be. They're getting ready to go out and celebrate their best friend's, impending wedding. They are loud, boisterous, all of that, right? And just getting ready to have some fun in Denver. They're going down to Denver to knock it out of the park. You know, and I'm just laughing. I was talking to him, you know, have a good time, be safe, you know, all those types of things. So,
right.
You never know.
I'm sure they're listening to that. Yeah,
exactly. Oh, yeah, you know, it's going to be a blast, right? So there were 6 of them. All right. So, fly to Denver, see you later, have a good time, blah, blah, blah. I go do my thing, never thinking I'm ever going to see them again in my life. Right. Lo and behold, they're on my return trip back to Los Angeles on Monday. And just as we said, you leave with 6. There were 4, and they didn't know where their friends were. It wasn't like they were totally totally worried. They've been known to maybe stray a little bit and find their way back somehow, some way. So they were mildly concerned. But as opposed to the boisterous, lively, they couldn't shut up, loud, getting ready to have fun, you could tell that they had their fun, because on the return trip, they're dark sunglasses, hoodies, you know, just looking pained in some distress. You know what I'm saying? Like,
there's no bounce in their step.
They're
just kind of sliding, you know, as they're walking through.
They exhausted all. The voices were hoarse. You know, yeah. One of them couldn't. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. We saw, you know, and I go, oh, you look a little different on the return back than you did coming. They were in so much pain. But obviously, it was that good kind of pain where you remember it and you have fun. And I, to this day, I wonder if those two other, the two strays ended up back in the fold, or at least made the wedding a week or so later.
Yeah,
so.
You almost hope that they were like, all right, I'll leave early to come back home. But no, they probably are.
No, they hooked up.
Yeah, they hooked up somewhere. Thing you know, they're like living that life of like, I think I'm really in love. This could be it. This could be the guy.
In Southern California, our spring break place was Palm Springs. They've closed that down since, and probably one of our groups, we'd go there every year, and one of our groups, I wasn't part of this, Clay, but there was a mini riot that occurred when there was just excessive everything, and they had to bring in like extra police to clear the streets and everybody get off the streets. It got really, really ugly.
And that's one of those communities where they'd be like, never again.
Never again. We're
this.
Stopping. We're, yeah. Heck, there used to be, the Angels would do some of their training camp or spring training there during spring break. In fact, I remember going, me and my friends went to an Angels game, and who was the right fielder? Jose Canseco. It was his first time up.
Oh.
And everyone kind of had an idea of who this hot prospect was, Canseco, and everyone in that section was just all over his ass. And then he hit a home run. He was pointing at us. So, and just funny because I saw him on Saturday at the Battle for Las Vegas. He and his brother were on the Raiders team. Anyway, so we drive up to Palm Springs, and it was me, my brother, my best friend, my cousin. So there was about five of us in this car, and my brother Charles, a notorious hothead. Right when we get to the brink of Palm Springs, we just get into this big argument, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, F it, just drop me off right here. He just gets out of the car, like, and it was a pack of people, Clay, and he just disappears. We could not find that. And this is before cell phones and before anything like this. He wasted like 6 or 7 hours of us trying to look for him.
Oh, that's unforgivable.
Trying to look for him. And you know where we finally we're finally like slowly coming down the street, the main strip, and it's just packed with people. And there was a bus stop, and there was a bench on this bus stop, and there's Charles sitting just looking pissed off as he sometimes can get. And we finally see him, and we're like, get your ass in the car right now. And then he saw us, and he comes running in the car. He was happy to see us because he regretted that whole decision almost immediately, but you know, he was too prideful to say anything, so he was just wandering the streets of Palm Springs for like 6 or 7 hours
vagrantly just
yeah,
wandering
like
around,
trying to figure out where we were. He didn't have the address of the hotel that we were staying at, so yeah, he almost became a stray before we even started the festivities. So
that's one of the those that did not come back, and mm-hmm. you're never sure if they're you're like, even does it deserve a call after the vacation is over?
Yeah.
Like, did you make it home? Because I really don't care anymore.
Right? Yeah, I don't even want to know the details. You're home, great. You know,
right, but you're dead to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Not being a part of any more
until next time.
Plans.
Until next time.
Oh man, it's crazy, and it's funny because the show starts out as we're all wondering, like, what's that fire or explosion or what happened?
Yeah.
Something happened down on West Flamingo, a few miles east of here. I don't know. All we could hear is just like this. You know, you're in a soundproof studio, but the sound of the sirens going down the street. You see the plumes of black smoke. You're like, what's going on?
Big old plumes of smoke. Yeah. So it looks like either a car, apartment complex, I don't know. Something happened down
there. Something happened.
And
I would have to think.
A bunch of fire engines, right, and cops and and ambulances were headed that direction. So we all just hope for the best. So I'm going to go here on Twitter here in a little bit.
I've been looking, but if you're on West Flamingo, if you have to travel to West Flamingo, somewhere between Decatur and Rainbow, we're kind of estimating there might be some delays.
Yeah.
And so please use caution in that area
for
as emergency
sure.
crews are on the scene.
For sure.
We don't know what's going on.
For sure.
You know, we'll talk to Jason Fitz at 8 o'clock, Rob Meech at 9. But you know, last night the home run derby. Did you watch any of it? Because I was rooting for Pete Alonso. I was trying to watch, you know, and learn the new rules for the home
Did
run
I tell
derby.
You it? Right,
right.
It was a whole new concept. So
I'm like, oh, can you guys just, you know, let's get it right.
How
let's make it interesting.
How about the national anthem?
Yeah, what I mean, the national anthem is now like the big story.
Well, because it was terrible.
That's too bad.
And as it turns out, I forget who. A friend of mine tweeted this, one of my friends from Southern California, and he came on. Apparently, the singer is this, you know, acclaimed singer. She's won, like, Grammy Awards, I guess. And he said, hey, look, you know, I was at a country concert. I'm not the biggest country, you know, fan in the world. But this show that I was at, she stole the show. So don't judge her on a bad night. She just had a bad night.
She had a bad night, yeah.
It was really bad. And players were kind of laughing during it. And here's the
people
thing.
People are cruel.
Somebody brought up a good point. You know, when you're booking your national anthem singer, I don't care how talented somebody is. You know, you can have all the awards you want. That is a hard song to sing. It's a truly hard song to sing. It's a very difficult. Anyone that has sung it, whatever. Hopefully my wife isn't listening because she always corrects me on my bad English sometimes. Not everyone can do it. I don't even care if you're an accomplished singer. It's just a difficult song to sing. And she obviously had trouble putting it all together. So it was shaky, to say the least. And it definitely blew up on social media.
It's tough. It's not an easy thing. And it wasn't intentional. That's the thing.
No,
like people
no,
will be
no.
People vilified certain national anthems. I remember
for
years
sure.
ago, the Roseanne Barr, you know, people
were
very upset, but she was playing a character singing the national anthem.
I had problems with that. I'm going to tell you, I don't care about your character. Don't disparage the song trying to get a few laughs. The one that I remember that people really criticized, either they loved or they hated. I can't understand how you would hate it. But I was there. It was Marvin Gaye singing the national anthem before the NBA All-Star game at the Forum, and just it's still to this day an iconic national anthem.
Oh man, I'll never forget it.
Right.
I was watching it on TV, and our family was just stunned. We were kind of busy doing stuff, and we're getting ready to turn off the TV, leave the house, and we just stood there in like acclaim.
And yeah, well, some people took that they were like he totally messed with the national anthem. You're not supposed to do that. There were calls galore. I think it was on CBS that particular year of people complaining. I'm like, how would you? He just did a beautiful rendition of it, and I thought he did it respectfully. Like with Roseanne's, there's a line there. I thought she disrespected the song a little bit. I get it that she was trying to get laughs, but probably not the stage to try to make it about you in terms of trying to get laughs. And she just kind of was screaming and yelling. It was just
another game. But, sometimes when you have these special events that are on national TV,
right.
Boy, they really take off. And, like, the Marvin Gaye national anthem was so different and so unique.
Beautiful,
We got into the car and we were driving and we were all kind of talking, like, how special that was. And, in Detroit, Marvin Gaye was like a mythic figure.
Yeah.
You know? So, it was hilarious because the next day, that was like everyone was against it. Or at least people were criticizing
half,
it, you know?
I would say half.
Yeah, yeah. People were against it. And we were like, we just saw something beautiful and special and unique. And why would we ever think otherwise? As an artist, of great acclaim, you love, you really respect somebody who could take it and do something different.
Yeah.
And I remember the broadcast at the time; they were blown away.
Was
it like Pat O'Brien and the guys?
It was Pat O'Brien, and then that whole. I think Musburger probably was part of that. And if you maybe at some point today we could play a little bit of it, coming in from one of our breaks. Because it really was special, and you saw, that was when everyone wore their. I guess they still do this in the. I don't know if they do this in the NBA, where they wear their actual uniforms. So all the players were in their uniforms, and you could see Marvin set up, and right behind him was, I think it might have been the East team.
Mm-hmm.
You had your Dr. J's and your Kareem's, and it was just like the heyday, one of the heydays of the NBA, and seeing them kind of getting into it as well. So yeah, we'll try to play some of that at some point today if we can.
It can't always
be. Are we allowed to do that?
Yeah, in small doses.
In small doses. Yeah. We don't want to get in trouble.
No. I mean, and baseball is weird like that because then they'll have like a celebrity singer go and sing the Take Me Out to the Ball Game, the seventh inning stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And you can never forget the when Ozzy Osbourne came to Wrigley Field and they opened it up for the seventh inning stretch to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
He definitely rallied. He rallied toward the end where you could hear what he was, you could understand, I should say, what he was saying. But I don't even think he was, he wasn't trying to do one thing or another. He was being Ozzy. But baseball being as crusty as it can be sometimes, you wonder if, if somebody who's really done a bad job with the national anthem or tried to put their spin on it and it didn't work, if they had to get up to bat, if the pitcher would throw it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't do anything out of the norm in baseball sometimes without pissing somebody off to the point of, you know, getting thrown out. I remember when I was covering the Dodgers, they were playing the St. Louis Cardinals in the playoffs, and the Cardinal players were barking at the Dodger players for being a little bit too demonstrative. It became kind of a thing, right?
Okay, yep.
And one of them was Adrian Gonzalez. Adrian Gonzalez, the Dodger first baseman. He's a huge Disneyland fan. He has daughters. They go to Disneyland all the time. So he had some, I don't know, mouse ear thing. When he would get a hit, you know, he would gesture something with the mouse ears. And all the Cardinal players were, that's disrespecting the game. And that's, you can't be doing that. And it became like this real point of contention with the Cardinals. And I remember talking to Adrian before a game, Gonzalez before a game. And he's like, watch what they do. Like, when they score a run or something like that, a big run, they're over there. So this whole, because there's some deep hatred between the Cardinals and Dodgers. It's a rivalry that, you know, a National League rivalry that goes back a long way. And they're both, you know, you forget that the Cardinals have won the second most World Series championships to the Yankees. And I think the Dodgers would probably be somewhere in that mix as well. So, but they've been always battling for that, sort of that second, you know, behind the Yankees. And You do forget that the Cardinals have been a proud franchise and have won a lot of World Series championships and just been a great organization. And there's this sense of, and I know my friend Matt, our listener, he just started a new job yesterday, but Matt Berger, one of our great listeners, who lives in St. Louis, I go back there to visit him from time to time, a huge Cardinals fan, so this is probably going to burn his eardrums right now. But there is a sense of, the Cardinals have a little uppity to them, like a little bit of superiority complex. We do it our way, you know, our Cardinal way. And that's what Adrian was trying to say, like their way. They're doing the same thing as everybody else. They get emotional, too. They have their little fun and their little, but they hate it when it's happening to them. So they're going to bark. And so, you know, basically you're saying, F them. I'm not changing anything.
I know, heaven
I'm
going to
do what I do.
Heaven forbid baseball tries to push some personality into the sport, you know, to try to even build a little bit of, like, you know, naturally occurring rivalry. You remember, like, even the outrage over the bat flip was happening. Uh-huh. And now it's like, you know, it's part of the game.
When Ken Griffey wore his hat backwards, that was the thing.
People didn't like,
you know,
that either.
In that series, yeah. this was during a playoff series between those two teams. But there was a ever heard of this? You know, I'm sure you have, but some of our listeners haven't it. But it was a, speaking about the national anthem, it was a national anthem face-off, and so the national anthem ends, and there were, you know how the players stay at the foot of the dugout, right?
Sure.
Okay, so two players, one for the Dodgers, one for the. It got kind of tight somehow, some way. It got out that they were going to do this. Like, we're not giving up an inch. You're going to give up.
Mm-hmm. You're giving it up.
No, you're giving up. So two players were left standing at the foot of the dugout, and they would not retreat back to the dugout. And it was just like this face-off back and forth. And I want to say that the Cardinal guy finally gave in. This was after a good 2 minutes. Now, 2 minutes is a long time to be sitting there going, we're not playing the game. We're not doing anything. We're going to stand here until one of us gives up and gives in. And it was the Cardinals guy. And you would have thought in the Dodger dugout that they won the damn World Series, because they were just like, their guy won. And they were just like high-fiving. Yeah, we won. I'm like, talk about not childish, but seriously.
Well, it's like the nonverbal last word. You know, like,
right.
Someone's
exactly.
Going to have the last word. I have the last face.
Right. A buddy of mine played junior college baseball in California. And you know how it could get pretty hairy down at that level too. So the one guy for his team gets up to bat, and he had struck out twice already in the game. And there's this thing in baseball, especially at that level. I don't know if they do it anymore, but when you strike out a third time, that's the hat trick. You know, going back to it's the hat
sombrero,
trick,
yeah.
In reverse. Yeah, the sombrero. So so what happens is, if you do strike out that third time, the other team throws their hats out of the dugout, you know, to the guys that are sitting on the bench to, like, you know, basically taunt you. So one player thought there was two strikes on the other team, and it was actually just one, right? But he missed. He lost track of the count. So swing and a miss, and he's not out, but there was one player on the other team who thought he was out, and there's this one lone hat that comes flying out of the dugout and lands right there on the first base line, And it's just all by itself. And no other hats followed because it wasn't he wasn't out.
Whoops.
And so then that fired up the other bench, like, oh, get your head in the game. You know, very next pitch, a home run. And that hat just that hat just stayed right there as he's running past it, circling bases for the home run. And you gotta imagine that dude's teammates were looking at him like, come on, dumbass. you just reverse jinxed the whole thing. But, you know, and he had to eat that thing. And everyone knew it was.
Oh, yeah. It's almost as bad as talking to somebody who's got a no-hitter.
Yeah, right.
You know, you've just stepped out of line.
Right.
That is not how we do it.
Nope. You don't do that.
People are on the text line asking if we have the Mike Ditka take me out to the ball game. Oh, we've got it.
The ball game. Take me out with the crowd.
Well, this is Wrigley Field. Come on, Mike. Oh, this is like violent.
Yeah, would you expect anything different?
Thank you, Mike.
Here's the thing.
Ditka.
And this goes for Ditka. It goes for Ozzy Osbourne. We are talking about the start of the bottom of the seventh inning, right? There's been some – that's 6.5 innings of – prime,
yeah,
you know what,
of endurance. If you can really if you're putting away the old style beer,
the old styles,
yeah,
baby,
yeah, you're gonna be on a different plane. You're gonna be on the moon by the time the seventh inning starts.
Yes, exactly. So in their defense, they're probably a little bit fired up, and who knows, that could have been one of those hot summer days too, where the humidity and the beer is kicking in. And now, you know, it's showtime, so you got to go out and do your thing. But Ditka could do no wrong in Chicago, right?
It's impossible. They're like, oh, this is the best one of all time.
Right.
Thanks, Mike Ditka. I'll never forget it. Hey, we'll take a break, and we'll come back. We'll give you the keyword of the day for the summer of fun, and we'll talk about the Raiders receivers and some contemplation of the what-ifs. We'll tell you what that means next.
They went backwards, and Jacoby threw it forwards, and it's 48-0 here early in the third.
Just how it was last year. I mean, we just like, you know, as Aiden coming in, getting more comfortable, the more we get around each other, the more comfortable we are, and we have a pretty cohesive unit right now, and it makes coming out here a lot more fun, makes it easier, and, you know, we spend a lot of time together outside of the facility too, which is, you know, what really makes this thing fully special when you have that type of bond and that type of connection with one another. So it's just going to continue to grow.
Thanks for being with us, Raider Nation Radio. Raiders Radio, we're coming back with Davante Adams talking about chemistry in the wide receiver room. All right, if you're listening for the Summer of Fun word of the day, text the word travel. Travel, T-R-A-V-E-L, to 702-365-9200. And you qualify for this week's Summer of Fun vacation, brought to you by Planet Nissan. 7-day vacation cruise through the Mexican ports of Ensenada, Cabo San Lucas, Mazatlan, and $500 spending cash. You always have the choice to just take the $3,000 payout. It's up to you. It's a Summer of Fun, brought to you by Planet Nissan. You know, and it's funny when you come back with, you know, the thoughts of how great that last Thursday night game against the Chargers looked, and, you know, Jacoby Myers throwing to Davante Adams, and then Davante, you know, in the mini camps explaining how there's great chemistry in the wide receiver room, how they get together off the field, and they're, you know, that's not unlike how we've seen other position groups of the Raiders interact with each other. We know that Max Crosby wanted that 2 years ago, where the defensive line room would be very, very close to each other, and that is now paying dividends, because now that's one of the strongest groups on the team, maybe if not the strongest. For the wide receivers, I like to see that too, because what they need to do is not only find cohesion and chemistry, they still need to find somebody to give them consistently the ball.
Yeah, and that's what it really – it's interesting when you look at the position of wide receiver, especially after watching the Netflix series Receivers. And, in fact, I just saw a interview with Tom Brady talking about the difficulty of playing wide receiver, and I've had this conversation with players like Davante Adams and other wide receivers too. You could do something absolutely correct 10 straight times and exert an incredible amount of energy doing everything right, making the right read, running a great route, getting yourself open, running down the field 30, 40 yards, whatever the case might be, and still not get the ball. And then have to run back to the huddle and then do it all again. The next play and still not get the ball and still not get the ball and still not get the ball. There's no, literally no payoff other than in your mind, you knew you did everything right there and the film won't lie and your coaches will appreciate it when they take a look at the film. But in terms of being rewarded, you're not getting rewarded with the ball. All right. And there is a sense of having to fight through that, because if you execute a great block, you feel it. You know it. You put somebody on their butt. You might have pancaked somebody. You might have opened up a hole for a running back, you know, to go get an extra 10, 15 yards or so. When you make a great pass as a quarterback, you feel it. You understand it. When you wipe out, when you make your tackle, even on the defensive line, if you execute your stunt correctly and maybe a teammate goes and gets the sack or the tackle, if you eat up a double team, even though you might not get rewarded on the stat sheet, you know that what I did contributed to us stopping this or mm-hmm. Getting a sack or whatever. There isn't that immediate payoff a lot of times for wide receivers. You can go an entire game and do everything correct and have one target to show for it or one catch to show for it in 70 some odd plays. So there is a mental challenge to sticking with it, and you bring up okay, so when you look at this Raiders wide receiver room, which is no doubt there's a lot of talent in this room, when you talk about Devontae and Jacoby Myers, and I think Trey Tucker is ready to take a next step forward, you got Michael Gallup, you got Jalen Guyton, you've got DJ Turner, who really turned himself into a great special teams player. There's some interesting candidates. Christian Wilkins is somebody to keep an eye on. Stayed in the building last year as a practice squad player. You've got some interesting undrafted free agents. But as good as it looks on paper, for that promise to be expressed during the season, it's going to require the quarterbacks to get them the ball. And that's what we were just setting up right there, is that they could do all they can do. They can do all the great things that they do as wide receivers, as a talented group for this particular team, and still not get maximized because the quarterback play isn't up to par. And that's why I keep going back to it. You could talk about the offensive line. You could talk about this. You could talk about that. It's all important. But for this offense to truly reach its potential and its ceiling, the quarterback has to play better, because there are a lot of weapons. And we haven't even gotten, I'm writing about the tight ends tomorrow, we haven't even gotten into that room yet. But just from a talent perspective in the wide receiver room, this is really good, and it could be really, really good if some of the some of those depth pieces, are can show that they can play some football, whether it's special teams or in the mix. But it's not going to matter much if the quarterbacks aren't doing their job.
Yeah, and you brought up how wide receivers have so many different responsibilities, and sometimes even if they're held without a target or a catch in certain frames of time. They're basically out there running cardio. They are doing a lot of different work. Jacoby Myers is somebody that comes up to mind that does a lot of the little things. And to see him, at the end of the year cumulatively, it's kind of amazing, as inconsistent the quarterback play was for the Raiders, that Myers still had over 800 yards receiving, 8 touchdowns and 71 catches.
Yeah, tied for the lead with the 8 touchdowns, 870 yards. He said 75 catches, 71 catches. And this was really interesting listening to this interview from Tom Brady that I saw yesterday. And he talked about how as a quarterback, it's easier to get the ball to your slot wide receiver and to your tight ends because they have more room to work. Think of it this way. If you're a perimeter wide receiver and you're on the left side of the formation, when you're running down the field, you can't turn left because it's out of bounds. You can only kind of turn right. That's your option, to break free or to make whatever adjustment you have to make. And so it's easier to take a wide receiver that's lined up on the perimeter out of the game defensively because you have that boundary to work with. Whereas a slot wide receiver can turn left, can turn right. They're in the middle of the field. A tight end could do the same thing. They can work the middle of the field. Yeah, they can work the middle of the field. They can adjust right. They can adjust left. So from Tom's perspective, he goes, it was easy to get the ball to Edelman. It was easy to get the ball to Gronkowski. It was easy to get the ball to the Wes Welkers, the guys that were lined up inside. He goes, it was a lot harder to work those perimeter guys because they were limited in what they're able to do from a route tree standpoint and an adjustment standpoint because they've got out of bounds to deal with. And that's one reason why, you probably like to see, maybe Devontae get moved around a little bit. Go from one side of the field to the other, or line them up sometimes in the slot. A lot of wide receivers, even great wide receivers like Devontae, will tell you they eat in the slot. That's where they like to line up because there's more room to operate.
Oh, it's something that almost every player could feel their production could almost double if you were able to be a productive slot receiver. We've seen some slot receivers make some amazing contracts in the second half of their career, like a guy like Christian Kirk, for example. Mm-hmm. Somebody, a slot receiver with Arizona, goes and makes $7 million a year because he's productive.
Right.
And he's somebody that could do a lot with the ball. I remember even Lynn Bowden, who was upset with the Raiders, the way the Raiders used him when he was in Miami. He's
wow,
like,
that's a blast from the past.
Yeah, he was like, well, if I was just used in the slot, I could have got the ball a lot more. Well, anybody can because you're going one-on-one with somebody more or less, or sometimes not blocked at all. Yeah, you're going to get some wide open stuff. You're going to catch the ball in space.
I don't know. He's talking out of his ear because, first of all, he just never flat. In training camp, I know a lot of us were like, that's the guy that they've been talking about, this Joker guy.
Joker.
He wasn't fast. There wasn't any explosiveness to him. It was apparent early
he was a very good college player.
Yeah, he was, right, exactly. But didn't have really a defined role in the NFL. And that's why, sometimes when we report, so-and-so's looking, oh, they all look good. No, they actually don't all look good this time of year. There's players this time of year, and when we get, we've already, covered the minicamp and the OTAs. There's players that stand out in those situations. I know that it's not tackle. I get it. I understand it. But I've been doing this long enough to be able to pick up on guys that, oh, man, they're okay. That's somebody to keep an eye on. Nate Hobbs was somebody like that, a fifth-round pick from Illinois. I mean, nobody was really giving him a whole lot of chance to make the kind of impact that he made as a rookie. He was a fifth-round pick from Illinois. Usually you're going to be a project. You're going to be a development player. Maybe something down the line, but from the first day that he stepped on the field, it was like, who's that? And then you look at your roster and you're like, oh, that's the kid from Illinois. Huh. He walks a little bit different. He carries himself a little bit different. He plays a little bit different. He doesn't back down. He's where he needs to be. And all these little things kind of add up, even in the spring where you're going, I'm keeping an eye on that dude in training camp. And then training camp happens and he's still playing, as opposed to Lynn Bowden, who is like, he was like a ghost out there. It's like, when are we going to see Lynn Bowden do what he's supposed to be able to do? And that's why they traded that dude before training camp even ended.
They traded him for Raekwon McMillan. And they're like, Raiders seem to get the better of that deal.
Overall. Right.
That's how less productive he was. But it's funny because you hear how Antonio Pierce appreciates certain little things out of some of those receivers. We'll come back with his comments about two wide receivers that he's feeling very, very good about. And it makes you feel like, all right, as a whole, how strong is this position group for the Raiders at wide receiver? We'll get your thoughts on the other side and continue on here at Raider Nation Radio, 702-365-9200. We'll also clear the phones and give you a chance to win these tickets, 4 tickets to go see the Vegas Summer League. Good any day from now until the 22nd. Go online to unlvtickets.com, 739-FANS. Get your tickets. But hey, I got your 4 right here, 702-365-9200. Caller 9 gets it on the gate. Raiders Radio Network with the call. Jacoby Myers touchdown from Aiden O'Connell here on Raider Nation Radio. We'll talk to Jason Fitz from Yahoo Sports in just a few minutes. Congratulations to Thomas. He's got 4 tickets for the Vegas Summer League here on Raider Nation Radio. Keep listening. We'll have tickets for Monster Jam taking place at the end of the month at the Thomas and Mack as well. You don't want to miss that. When you think about the wide receiver room for the Raiders, Jacoby Myers is an integral part of it just because of not only his consistency, but he does so many different things that that don't necessarily go up on the stat sheet. I even think about the Chargers game where he ran 4 touchdowns, threw 4 touchdowns. He also delivered some huge blocks. One that smashed Khalil Mack right in the face when he was trying to come off left tackle. It was just a beautifully designed play to go in kind of, pancake, a pass rusher. So he does all these little things. And I would think for a year last year, it had to be frustrating as you saw frustration on Devontae Adams' face. What about Jacoby Myers? Because this is somebody that could reach high levels as a receiver on just about any team, but yet he still has to go and find a role here But I think he's shown that he could be one of the more reliable receivers and one that Aiden O'Connell really trusted.
Yeah, and I think that if you're Jacoby Myers, you know, it's not that anyone's ever satisfied, especially when the win and loss total was what it was last year. But if you're Jacoby Myers, you're pretty happy about the season that you had. I mean, mm-hmm. I think he probably exceeded some people's expectations. You know, with the catches and the yards and the touchdowns, 8 touchdowns that tied for the team lead, showed that he was an all-around type of a player. You know, got banged up with that concussion early on that cheap hit and against the Denver Broncos. So for me, that's one of the players that I look at and I'm like, I believe that he feels pretty good about the season that he had in an all-around sense, as opposed to maybe a Davante Adams who has. You know, he has such high expectations for himself, and through no fault of his own, his season last year was a little bit of a watered-down season compared to seasons past, and there wasn't anything that he was doing wrong. It was just what wasn't going on at quarterback. So I could definitely see Devontae being, you know, boy, we left a lot out there on the on the field, and that frankly frustrates him and angers him, and he wants to, you know, do better this year. But part of him doing better this year is really on the quarterbacks, not him. Whereas Jacoby, I think, is a little bit more satisfied. My question, as I was writing this story, and it's up over at VegasNation.com if you want to check it out. What happens if somebody gets one of those top two guys goes down, mm-hmm. And you don't want to think about it, but this is football, and you know, stuff happens. People get hurt. You look at last year, Cooper Kupp goes down, and I'm sure everyone was, if you're a Ram fan or following the Rams, you're like, uh-oh, what are they going to do now? Well, there was a guy by the name of Puka Nacua who they drafted that just went off and had a historical season for a rookie. They didn't miss a step. You know, when Cooper Kupp went down, what would happen if somebody, if the Raiders' number one wide receiver, if a Davante Adams or maybe even a Jacoby Myers were to go down? Do you feel good that Trey Tucker is going to be able to step in and offer you? Obviously, you're not going to replicate what Davante does, but can you get close? You know, Puka surpassed Nacua surpassed what Cooper. You would have expected Cooper to do. That's just, that never really happens. But can somebody, you know, pick up the slack? Do you believe, you know, that we mentioned Tucker. I don't know that DJ Turner profiles like that. I don't know if Christian Wilkerson profiles like that. And you start going down the list, Jalen Guyton. I don't think that he's that type of a player. Michael Gallup is a guy that has had 1,000-yard season in his career. He's dealt with some injuries since then. He's still been a productive player, and I think in the right role, he can certainly help this team. But I do worry, I would be a little bit concerned if one of the top two guys goes down this year for the Raiders, because I don't know that they have anybody in the back end of that room that's going to be able to really fill that void.
And, you know, it's funny, like Michael Gallup coming into the team, you're looking at it on paper, you know, at the time, that was definitely one of the better free agent signings in the offseason, a guy that has, considerable talent, somebody who has not fully come back from the injury the way you thought production would be, and also a lot of targets were taken away by CeeDee Lamb in Dallas. But at the same time, is he going to be, Michael Gallup, one of those Raider wide receiver free agents that we've seen in the past few years that you get signed in the offseason, you feel like there's a good role? DeMarcus Robinson, Willie Snead, John Brown, they don't make the final roster.
Right.
You know, they sound pretty good and like, wow, that's an interesting little quotient to put in there, adding more depth, but they get beat out. They don't actually make the final roster.
Well,
and I'm wondering, is he going to be more like a Nelson Agholor, Michael Gallup? Somebody that could come in and, like, wow, really surprise you and bring that veteran presence and also have a lot more left in this game.
Well, you know, for him to do what Nelson did, there would have to be an opportunity would have to happen. I mean, Nelson came in and became basically the I'm trying to think back. Okay.
He was a de facto wide number one.
Yeah, or, mm-hmm. You know, for sure, at the very least, a number two.
Because they were still waiting for Ruggs and Edwards to mature.
Yeah, and if you're talking about, you know, passing game options, I'd say that he was second in the pecking order to the tight end. Darren Waller, I think, was first on the pecking order in terms of weapons that you want to get the ball to. He's going to get his, mm-hmm. should get his, you know, 10 to 12 targets per game. And then Aguilar was somebody that ended up being number two on that list. And, you know, you, like you said, you had some of the youngsters on the team as well. I don't know that. And I mean, there's probably a lot of part of Raider Nation that hopes that that never comes to that. You know what I'm saying? Like, forget that. You want Davante Adams and Jacoby Myers to be the two lead dogs in terms of the wide receiver room. And then you've got Trey Tucker, I think, who's going to, you know, force his way onto the field. It'll be really interesting to me to when they go to 12 personnel with the two tight ends, a wide receiver is going to have to come off the field. And I would imagine that's going to be Trey Tucker at times. But I would imagine I'm curious to see if he stays on the field in certain packages and Jacoby comes off the field, or maybe even sometimes Devontae. But let's just focus on Jacoby coming off the field for Trey Tucker to stay on the field, because I think the one thing that Trey Tucker brings that Jacoby doesn't necessarily bring, not at the level that Trey Tucker has, is the speed factor. And I think in 12 personnel with two tight ends, two wide receivers, and a running back, you can because of the way the defense is going to be structured, having to deal with those two tight ends and another wide, and let's say Davante Adams, you're going to have an opportunity to get upfield and to create some space for a speedster like Trey Tucker. So there's snaps that are going to go that are going to go to Trey Tucker in whether it's 11 personnel or 12 personnel is what I guess the point I'm trying to make. Where do the snaps come from Michael Gallup? He's going to make the team. I'd be shocked if he didn't make the team. They're going to probably carry six wide receivers. I went back and looked, and last year, for the most part, they had six wide receivers. They certainly did at a training camp and into the middle of the season. And for me, that's the big question. So Devontae, Jacoby Myers, Trey Tucker, Michael Gallup, that's your top four. Who's five and six? All right.
Well, five and six, somebody's also going to be doing some receiving duties out of the kickoff return.
That's the
punt return as well.
Yeah. And when we talk about special teams, I know we always get focused on the return game. You have to also account for the coverage game. And that's where a guy like DJ Turner turned himself into a really good special teams player as somebody that covered punts, as somebody that covered kickoffs and was extremely important, even in a low key way. But those who are, you know, understand the game and those in the special teams room understand the value that he brought. So does he make the team, because of that? And then what happens to, like, a Wilkerson? I've really liked Wilkerson. He's like that guy that I wonder if he does get the opportunity, if somebody were to go down and he had to be that wide receiver that took over the snaps for a Davante Adams for a couple of games or a Jacoby Myers, is he the kind of guy that's going to be able to flourish in that role? Because you look at the body, you look at the physicality, you look at, he's always, to me, flashed, whether it's in practice or preseason, as somebody that he has some interesting skills that he can bring to the table. But for him to make the team out of the gate, he's also going to have to show that he can play special teams, because you can't have a guy that's just waiting on the sidelines to replace somebody that's hurt if he's not also able to, while he is up as a insurance policy for somebody to go down, not be able to produce on special teams. You have to be able to produce on special teams while you bide your time until you get off onto the field. I don't know that Wilkerson is that guy, but he's going to have to show it.
Jason Fitz from Yahoo Sports will join us next. We'll talk to him about the Raiders wide receiving room and more here on Raider Nation Radio.